Mini episode 1885 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1885. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with you today. And this is a very, very, very special mini episode that we have for you. This mini episode, I would say, is a real passion project for me because it is about one of my favorite TV shows of all time, and it is Small World. It is about a book chronicling the show that is written by a friend of mine from way back. Somebody who is at the very enviable intersection in life of one of the nicest people I've ever known and one of the most talented people I've ever known. Her name is Kimberly Potts. She is a longtime TV reviewer, and we've spoken with her on the show previously about Better Call Saul. It was as the last season of Better Call Saul was ensuing at the time. Her book is called It's Almost Always Sunny in Philadelphia, How Three Friends Spent $200 to Create the Longest-Running Live-Action Sitcom in History and Help Build a Network. That network, of course, is FX. And that was basically back in the mid-2000s. Holding the book up here for the camera so y'all can see it. This is something that hopefully will be on the Christmas shopping list of everybody who is checking us out here today. And, going to do my part to help you with the book sales, Kimberly. Nobody
Thank
deserves
you,
it more than you. This is a great book. What a treat it was to read it. Like I said, because of what you mean to me personally, you're a great friend. And so I'm very, very proud of you. But as a super fan, I was just like, my glory. I was like a pig hunting for truffles in there and finding them all over the place.
That seems like an appropriate comparison talking about Sunny. That just seems to fit right there.
It does.
And maybe I think that would be a good episode for them to go hunting for money that way. If they found out how much money they could make, I'm sure that they would head off on that adventure.
You've just given an idea, probably. If anybody catches this, anybody that knows Rob McElhaney and passes it along to him, perhaps we'll see it someday. But in terms of Rob McElhaney, one of the things that really struck me about this book was that it was a thing where it's both a great work that you have put together and also a thing where at the same time, a thing where almost kind of fortunate in the sense also that like a lot of shows, when they get to the 20th anniversary, when they get the milestones like this one, they'll want to do their own project like this. I know they've had the podcast going on over a period of time and they've all got a lot of other different projects and stuff like this. But you wrote something that because of the access you had, it comes off as being really almost an authorized kind of a project for the amount of access that you had. And it's like, you know, for your sake, I'm so happy like that they didn't decide to do one of these things that, you know, themselves, because that would have probably cut off the access for you and frozen it if they were doing their own thing. So it's both a great project on your part. And like, thank God your thing is the only one of its kind that's out there.
I was kind of shocked. I mean, I sold the book a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, we had that in the future that it would maybe hit around the 20th anniversary. But you know, it's weird with publishers, they actually have kind of an almost, just like wish against not matching up with anniversaries. Mm-hmm. They think that, and it does turn out to be somewhat true. I mean, you can't deny that when it's the 20th anniversary of a show like this, that, you know, when I would talk to people about what I was doing when I was working on it, the number one question people who weren't regular viewers would ask me was, is that show still on? And I was like, yes, it is. It's in its, you know, it's about to start its 17th season. And they really couldn't believe that. And, you know, there are people who watch it in the beginning and who have kind of fallen off, but there is that very hardcore fan base, like both you and I are. And that we both, I'm sure, know so many people who are, mm-hmm. and people who've watched it since they were in college or high school and have never stopped watching. But it is that the show has been going for so long. And I was deathly afraid that, you know, I would pick up some publishing related magazine or something some week, and I was going to see that there was Rob McElhenney is writing his own book, or Charlie Day is writing his own book, which they both should. I mm-hmm. would read the hell out of those books, as I'm sure you would.
Yes.
But we did kind of luck out with it coming out, and the publisher timed it to come out right before the new season started, season 17, which is pretty mind blowing that this little show that, you know, really did start up with $200 is now this show, and they've all become stars on different levels and all the different things they're doing. One of my favorite things about recent time is that finally the whole world knows how amazing Caitlin Olsen is. Just so funny and so majorly talented, and with the ABC show, finally a whole new fan base knows that. So, but yeah, we did really luck out with how and when it came out.
Well, one can easily grasp the commonality between us of the script school background here at Ohio University. You set me up in a lot of different areas here based on what you said. You've anticipated a lot of the things that I wanted to get to with this here. Caitlin Olsen, by the way, and I hadn't written down anything about her. Very glad you mentioned her, because I totally agree. One of the greatest comedic actresses I think I've ever seen. Somebody who does physical comedy better than anybody. And like you said, she's showing a lot more range on High Potential than mm-hmm. she's ever gotten a chance to do with Sweet D. So I completely back you up on that. And as far as season 17 of Sunny and where it's at this point in time, I guess I'll start there and kind of work our way backwards a bit. That's one of those things where I watched it and I was like blown away, because like in recent seasons, there have been episodes here and there that have been like among my favorites ever. But like season 17, it was just like, you know, one banger after another, I felt
it
like.
Really, and
it was incredible. It was just like, how is this thing? I'm not going to necessarily say better than ever, but like as far as like going back in, and a lot of it was mining stuff that they'd done in the past. A lot of it was not being afraid to parody present stuff like the bear, as they did in the one episode. And it was just like, I'm looking at it here now, and we're at the time of year where I prepare a thing on the show every year where I'll go through and I'll kind of rate what I think the top five TV seasons of the year are. And so it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, thank you. And like my list is going to be a lot the same as a lot of the other ones out there. I mean, I'm going to have Severance number one. I love Severance. The Bear is going to be in there, and a couple
of the
usuals.
The
Bear is awesome. But it's like, I've never put Sunny on my list before, as much as I love it, because it's like when you're doing year-end things like that, maybe it's because it's a comedy or whatever, it doesn't always necessarily feel like it fits, but like I'm looking at it like, I know people might call me a homer, I got to put it on my top five list this year. And it's incredible. And it's 17 seasons in. Nobody's ever gone as long as they've gone.
Yes.
So it's unprecedented on so many levels, Kimberly.
It really is. I mean, there were great episodes. The spoof of The Bachelor was great, or The Golden Bachelor. Mm-hmm. And DeVito, of course, that's just such a perfect storyline for him. There were great moments. I was shocked. I still find the episode, and sorry if we're going to spoil for anyone, at the racetrack, at the mm-hmm. dog track.
That was amazing.
I did not think they could do anything shocking at this point, but that one actually did.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they were just the writing, everything. And that's always for them when the best episodes, when the writing is really great, when they have a great idea. And they just did all season. And I mean, I know it's only 8 episodes, but I kind of love that they're at that point of doing 8. I mean, of course, I'd like to watch more, but I feel like they have that really tight 8 episodes. Like when they, can focus on just those 8, they really can put just a ton of good ideas into one episode. And this year, I agree with you. I was not expecting this to, as you said, to call it one of the best seasons. I don't think that's crazy to call it one of the best seasons. And I don't think it's crazy to say they're still at the top of their game. They still have ideas. They're willing to talk about all these things. Yeah.
That they're clearly still at the top of their game. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And this is a thing where, talking about, where they're at right now in terms of the origins of it 20 years ago or 20 plus in the preparation, the lead up to what would end up being season one. Such a great, the book just hits with a bang, like right off the top. This whole thing, putting meat on the bones of like the $200 pilot, what all went into that. And all the things too of like, and I will tell you, like I have set this aside for maybe the holidays would be a perfect time. And I was like, I need to set aside time to do this because like one of the things out there, like if you're telling me that there are humor videos that were shot when Charlie Day and Jimmy Simpson were roommates. Like Charlie Day, I mean, he's my favorite from the show. He is for a lot of people, as
Me
far as who
too.
makes you laugh the most. Yeah, I mean, that's how a lot
Yes.
of people look at it. But like Jimmy Simpson, I've always looked at like, I love anything that that guy's in. That guy is like, and
Same.
I don't, I like, I never want it to come off like, slighting if I say that I think somebody's underrated, but I mean, I think he definitely is. Like, he should be a much bigger name than he is based on his talent level. Like, that's how great I think
Absolutely.
he is. Yeah. It's like, I don't mean to slight the guy, by saying that. I hope I'm not, but he's so good. He's so funny. I would watch him in so many different more things. You're telling me that
Exactly.
there's videos that are out there with those guys from
There,
way back in the day.
yes.
It's incredible.
Yeah, they're pretty weird. I mean, as you would expect them to be, you would almost hope them to be.
Yes.
Yeah, I just it cracks me up that they were roommates, and every time I'm they were roommates in the East Village, and every time I'm in that area and I pass the streets they lived on, it makes me laugh. It makes me
Yeah.
chuckle to myself because I just can't imagine how fun and wacky that must have been with the two of them just running around with a video camera. The idea of that is hilarious.
It is. And it was things like that that would help serve as some of the origins of the ideas of the show. And again, you spend such a great amount of time with the universe building in the early parts of the book on again, how they did that $200 pilot, everything that went into it, some of the rejections along the way, some of the pitch meetings that
Yeah.
didn't go well. And, it was really, really entertaining because, I mean, I'd heard about that. Everybody I think that's a super fan had as far as the
Yes.
cheapo pilot, but everything that they ended up doing, you really brought it to life. And then the whole thing that, again, I'm not saying that it's necessarily the reason that they're still here today, but it's almost impossible to imagine a version of the show where this didn't happen. The very, very monumental step after season one of Danny DeVito getting introduced into this. And that's one of those things where, again, what he has done as Frank Reynolds, being such a singularly demented character in TV history, it's like
Yes.
for a guy that's a legend to come into a franchise and help elevate it. I mean, it's like, first of all, 17 seasons of a live action comedy is completely unprecedented in TV
Yes.
history. But like what Danny DeVito has done in his career, equally unprecedented by coming in and doing this, that his first, life or whatever you want to call it in the business was becoming
Yeah.
a legend from doing all these other things. And his second life as Frank Reynolds, 16 seasons long and then some. Nobody's ever built a track record quite like what Danny DeVito's done.
No, he deserves, I don't, there isn't an honorary or award that is befitting of him, but there should be one. And maybe it should be called the Danny DeVito Award that, they give comedy stars at the Emmys or something, because or the Oscars, whatever. I mean, he's, you know, lived in all those worlds, the movie world and the TV world and the TV commercial world now he's very big in. But no, I don't think you can say enough, and I don't think any of the other cast members would say you can say enough about how important he is to the show, how important he was to getting them to, you know, season three and season four, and then the Night Men Cometh and all the other big milestones for them. They absolutely would praise him, and they also just love him. They have very much a fatherly kind of a relationship with him. They all do. But also, I don't think that they always think of him as fatherly, because he's always doing those crazy Frank things. And you know, when he gets one of his wacky ideas or one of his business ideas, you know, he's kind of the leader of the pack. I don't think anybody thinks of him as the old guy on Sunny, as Frank or as Danny. You're right though. It is a pretty amazing that he had the taxi career and the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest career. And then because he was friends with FX president John Landgraf, this idea came about for him to join the show in season two. And I don't think anybody ever looked back.
Yeah, it's just a storybook. If you could even imagine to put into a storybook, which you probably couldn't, as far as everything that he's gone on to do with this show. And just yes. The talent reservoir that they have had in front of the camera, behind the camera, and again, some yep. of the core, same core characters in both roles, as it were. But the bench that a show like this has, which is funny because the time that they were on, I think... it was the Family Feud parody when they had Cricket on there. We don't have a real deep bench. Well, that's sort of, you know, shining a spotlight on. They actually do. If you're looking at the show, right. They actually do. And yes. Just the list of characters in it, which extends to the significant other of every one of the three core creators of the thing here, of course, Caitlin Olson yes. in a large role, Ms. Ellis as the waitress here, and then yes. Dennis's better half from the Dennis system. So yes. They've all been on there. And when you're looking at just some of the great supporting characters for the show, whether it be Uncle Jack or some of the other ones here, yes. Certainly one of the greatest by far would be the lawyer, of course, played by the great Brian Unger. I was yes. thrilled to find out from your book, a fellow Bobcat, just like me and you, and yes. somebody who consented to be the narrator for the audiobook of the project. So that's another thing I got to congratulate you on. Like, you got the lawyer to do this. This is awesome.
Thank you.
And working with him had to be so cool.
It was very exciting. I remember the first time he sent me a snippet of him recording. And, you know, he has that great voice anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really great, deep, smooth voice. And, yeah, I knew the really funny thing about it was, you know, he's written. I did an interview with him for the book. And so he's written about in the book. And I just kept thinking, is that going to be weird? Does that happen that often that someone does the narration of a book that they're written about in the book? And he figured out how to do that and make that work too. And I would invite, and I'm saying this honestly, if you are going to only read the book or buy the book or read or listen to the audiobook, I have to admit, I would definitely go for that audiobook because it's killer. He is just great. There is no one who could have done a better job than Brian did.
Yeah, I was blown away when I read that initially that he had done the audiobook. That is so cool. And it's one of
it
those
was a
things.
Thrift.
Oh yeah. I can imagine, you know, and it's a thing where, again, that appeals to, again, the super fans like me. Yes. I think it also appeals to the folks who are the more casual viewers of the show as well. And that a book like yours, the audio book, it is something I think that kind of bridges that between the areas of the fan base. And you have some stuff in the book, a whole chapter about the super stands and some of the folks that have really, really devoted themselves to the fandom, even in ways far beyond myself. I mean, I'm somebody that's watched the whole series multiple times, or at least up to seven, season 17. I don't know that I've seen the 17 ones repeatedly. That ought to be my next thing to do. But, it's one of those.
You don't have a Danny tattoo or a tattoo. Yeah,
no.
Me neither.
I don't know.
No tattoos.
I don't drive a Vanny DeVito around the country. I don't get in any of these things here.
You don't wear a Vanny pack?
No, I don't have a Vanny pack. I don't have all of these things here. I mean, what I do have is this nice, handy Rumham T-shirt here. I wore this in honor of you and the book for the day. So I have some things. I have a Charlie Kelly wild card T-shirt that is similar to this. So, I have a few things here and there. I feel like a poser alongside some of these folks, though, because they're so far into it. But it's funny that, like, as you see people, and there are people over a period of time, like, you know, you were probably this way initially. I was this way initially of like, oh, okay, I kind of like this show. And then, like, somewhere along the way, just completely fall in love with it. So. Yes. I have to tell you the experience here, and he's going to be so grateful to get the shout out. My nephew, Fletcher Morris, I introduced him to the show.
Oh, my God,
what a
great name.
Oh, he'll enjoy here. I'm going to be playing this for him over the holidays, so he's going to appreciate you putting his name over.
He needs to become a rock star or, I don't know, a best-selling author or something with that name. That is just a great name.
He's going to be so happy when he hears this, Kimberly. When we reached the point somewhere in his later teen years, when I thought that his parents wouldn't object to me introducing him to Sonny, I pulled up for him what was what remains my favorite Sonny episode to this day, which is The Gang Reignites the Rivalry. So we watched it together. He enjoyed it. He's like, oh, this is an excellent show. I'm going to watch more of this. So he let me know, I think it was earlier this year, one of the last times that I'd seen him, that he said, Uncle Rick, I got to tell you this. So he was, I think this was him and his friends in his fraternity, that they were, a number of them are enough that they're enamored of the show to such a degree that they created their own Charty McDennis game that they ended up playing. So that's the thing where, yeah, I mean, that's devotion right there. I mean, if you're going to that degree of commitment to your fandom, to a show that you're going to do that. And I think I even told him at the time, I said, when I go to promote this book, when it comes out, I will make sure I get that in there. So Fletcher, I did what I told you I was going to do. And Kimberly, I look forward to hearing your thoughts on that. What do you think when you hear a story like that, that the young guy who, that's how much he comes to love the show, that him and his friends create something like that?
Well, first of all, I love that you introduced him to the show, because that's just a special thing. And I mean, it's cool that you waited till you felt he was old enough that his parents weren't going to be upset about it. But I just love that that's how he found the show. I think there are probably a lot of similar situations where an uncle or an older brother or an older cousin or someone has introduced this show, and I think that definitely is not a coincidence, given to its longevity, that people are still watching, and that because they're introduced, you know, to it, they may have never seen a single episode, and maybe, you know, it's season almost 18, it will be 18 next year, and you know, they're just being introduced to it. I think that's still happening. But most of all, what I want to know about their Charty McDennis game is what's involved in their version of it.
I will message you that when I find out more about it. I'm intrigued myself. I will pass that along.
I want to know how elaborate this is. And I mean, I'm guessing that there are the challenges and parts of the rules are common to maybe their fraternity or their, they go to Georgia Tech, you said, I think you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I want to know about this. Yeah.
I'll find out and I will pass that along to you. And something that I teased out earlier also too, this was something that I had done back in 2017 on this podcast. Was I had put together at the time, sometimes over the holidays, I'll put up a little bit of evergreen content, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that year, what I decided to do was to rank all of the episodes of Sunny to date. And I did it in the form of the Dennis system. So I created six tiers, and it pained me to put anything on the S tier. In this case, the S tier was the bottom. It pained me to put anything there, but I had to commit to doing this the right way. So I'm going to read you off the Dennis tier, 13 to one, number 13 to number one. This is through 12 seasons of the show. So this is okay. What I had at the time. Number 13, the Aluminum Monster versus Fatty Magoo.
Yes.
Number 12, the gang goes to the Jersey Shore.
Yes.
Number 11, the gang gets invincible.
Yes. Oh, that has one of my all-time favorite Dennis lines when he's talking about he's a gazelle person. He's running like a gazelle person.
Yes. I also love the part about ingesting viscous chemicals.
Yes. And of course, the fake Donovan McNabb working at McDonald's.
Oh, you know, and I'm thinking of the Jersey Shore. I'm thinking of that one, the viscous chemicals for that one. Oh, yeah. That one, Dee breaking her leg with the punt, yes. You know, and Charlie going on the trip he went on, et cetera. So, yeah that was.
It was so packed. That episode is just packed.
Yeah. It's got so many moments in it. Number 10, I think you're going to like this one based on me and you earlier talking about Charlie Day / Charlie Kelly. Flowers for Charlie is number 10 on my list.
Brilliant episode. That is just that episode should have been nominated for an Emmy at the very least. That is just a legitimately great episode. Very clever and a little sweet. They don't like to throw in the sweetness in too often. Which is good because it works really well when it does. But I love that episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do as well. It really showcases everything with the Charlie character so well. Number 9, this is one where it actually was from season 12. There's a lot of these ones here that are from the earlier to mid seasons of the show up to this point. So when I say coming into season 17, you know, my thoughts were, oh, if I get one or two of these ones that I think could be on the all-time list, that would be great, versus that we ended up getting a bunch of them. It was at that point in time, it was a little bit more sporadic with the episodes, as much as I love the show, where I would take one and I'd put it on the all-time list. But I don't hear this one talked about a whole heck of a lot. Number 9 from season 12, the gang goes to a water park. I love that episode.
That one was the one written and directed by the, why am I not remembering the HBO, oh my gosh, Game of Thrones guys.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. They did that one. Yeah. It had like a little bit of a different feel to it, but you know, the classic politically incorrect humor of the show. AIDS coming through. AIDS coming through. You know,
it was a great Danny episode.
Yes. Danny was awesome on that one. You had Dennis going on the scheme with the little girl trying to turn her into a clone of him. It was really, really, really underrated episode.
I agree.
I don't think most of the rest of the ones I have here are probably not underrated, but that one probably is. Number 8, Mac and Charlie, White Trash.
Yes. The swimming pool. Charlie doing... There, you know what, that brings up one thing I love about the show that I think does, I would argue better than any other comedy, even a Friends or that level of show. I love how they pair each, they're obviously an ensemble, but the ensemble is great, and it's always great when they're all scheming together.
Yes.
But they have a way of pairing two or three characters to make like a completely mind-blowing story work so well. My favorite is probably Charlie and Dee. I think they have such great comics. They have great energy. They have that. They both have that really sometimes aggressive but frenetic energy, and so they work so well together. And I love the one that you just mentioned, Charlie and Mac together. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Charlie and Dennis are kind of, if you had to pick best friends, they would probably be, well, best friends, frenemies. they would probably be the one. But they, and Danny is paired great with everyone, but obviously he and Charlie also, as the world's longest and strangest roommates,
yes,
are so great. Yeah, it's just, they do that so well. And they're, you know, I just love that they do that. And I think that actually also adds to, is one of the big reasons for their longevity, because they figured that out and it gives them so many more storyline possibilities.
Yes, yes. It helps with the freshness, the fact that they can pair different combos together to center episodes around. Number seven is one of the most famous of them, the Dennis system, which is, and if you're going to have like one episode that ever shows, you know, in terms of, you know, all of the psychosis and everything like that, that Dennis has, that Glenn Howerton,
it goes.
Oh yeah. Like when Glenn Howerton, when he was asked, like, how come you're the only actor that doesn't have a character named after you? Cause I don't want people to mistake me for my character. You couldn't do much better than the Dennis system for this. The one that ironically his real life wife or wife to be at the time ends up acting in. So life imitates art, but not exactly.
Yes. She plays his victim even.
Yes.
Yes. She was a good sport, but she was really good in it too.
Yes. Yes, she was. It was an incredible episode. Number six is one of the, this is one of the ones that, like, you could not imagine any other show doing this. I mean, a lot of Sunny episodes, sure, but number six is on a short list if you could not imagine another show even trying this. Number six, Dennis looks like a registered sex offender.
Yes. Yes. And he, I love the makeup that he, I mean, I can still just, I can picture that the makeup that they did as the actual registered sex offender. Yeah, that is one of the, which season was that?
That was, season three.
Season three. Yeah. I thought it was an early one.
Yeah.
That was one of the first ones where I think you were really like, wow, they will go anywhere. I mean, there were others before that, but I think that was definitely, as you said, no other show, especially now, no other show could attempt something like that.
We have another one like that a little bit later on the list, but
okay.
No, number five is another one from season three. The gang dances their asses off. I think that's the finale.
Love that. I love when they dance, and they each have their own little, you know, Mac with his elbows coming up, and they have those signature things, and I love them.
Yes, it is. That episode is such a great showcase of what you just talked about there. Just the ways that they can be entertaining. Again, the physical comedy. Physical comedy is one of the key components of this show. There's a lot of that at number four also. Another one from, this would have been the later years at the time that I made the list, season 10. And of course, it was 12 seasons that had aired to that point. Number four, The Gang Beats Boggs. I was very entertained to read your notes about that episode in the book, among other things.
Yes, I love that episode. And I got to interview Wade Boggs for the book about that episode, which was, I have to say, I was a little giddy about that as well.
Right.
Partly because it's Wade Boggs, but partly because his son, whose name is Brett, is the godson of my all-time sports hero, George Brett.
Oh,
and so I got to talk to him a little bit about that. That was fun. But he also has a, you know, he initially turned down doing the story because obviously that had been a thing that people talked about for years, whether it was really true and stuff. And he at first turned it down because his mother had been killed by a drunk driver.
Okay.
So he, you know, just wasn't sure he wanted to make it a comedy issue. But then his son, it was a huge, is a huge fan of Sonny, and said, you should do it. You know, they, and he kind of explained to him, they, the things that they say and do are the exact opposite of the way the people who make the show feel, you know, this is not how they feel about things. And so he said, okay, he would do it. He watched a bunch of episodes and he said, okay, I get it. And they did it. And he was very happy that he did it. And, you know, it, it, it really is one of the best episodes.
That is great that he came around to it in that way. Number three, I teased it before, something you could only ever see on Sonny, particularly in this day and age. This is from season seven, Frank Reynolds' Little Beauties. That's an episode I like to show if somebody hasn't seen the show, just to kind of freak them out a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, just the image of Frank with all that makeup on.
Yes.
So many moments from that. I totally agree. Yeah, that has to be in the top tier.
Yes, that that definitely belongs there. Number two, this is a slam dunk that people would put in there. It is, again, one of the most famous ones in there. And daring in its own way, daring in a completely different way than Frank Reynolds' Little Beauties. But in terms of the whole musical concept of it, The Night Man Cometh, that has to be on everybody's top tier.
It has to be. Yeah, I mean, I think that probably is maybe the first episode that a lot of people have watched. Because if there is one episode that really does show every character being who they are, you get the backstory of Charlie being in love with the waitress and scheming, you get, the great, I can't remember her name now. The older lady who plays the piano for them.
Gladys. Yeah.
Gladys trying to tell them about how she knew the president, just this whole thing. And that was all real. She was an older lady, and she just a great actress, a great older lady that they fit in a couple of episodes. But she was there actually playing the piano and trying to tell them how she knew Calvin Coolidge. And and it has Artemis, a great role for Artemis, who is one of the best recurring characters, for no, hands down about that. It just has so much. And then it's actually a, you know, a musical with songs that you get stuck in your head. I mean,
yes.
And they did it as a real musical. They did a little tour of it and got to live like rock stars thanks to Danny renting a bus for them, which is a great story also. But yeah, that you cannot underrate The Night Man Cometh. And I think, again, it's an episode that should have been nominated for an Emmy. I mean, there are sitcoms more, you know, widely spread sitcoms that network kind of things that have done musical episodes and have gotten nominations, Emmy nominations and things like that for them. I don't think anyone has topped The Night Man Cometh for the music, the comedy, how just genuine to the show and what the show is, it was. Yeah, you know, and there's been talk for years that they might do a Broadway version of The Night Man Cometh. So let's hope that happens sometime.
If anything could ever get me to a Broadway show, it would be that. I would be there to see The Night Man.
I'm going to hold you to that. If it comes to Broadway, you've got to come to New York.
If it does, you will see me there, because yes, I will definitely see that. That would be a heck of a thing to be able to say. My first Broadway show is The Night Man Cometh.
Right.
But that would be a very unique story. Number one on my list here is, and I'll just preface this by saying that, like, much like Seinfeld, where my favorite episode is The Voice, I've come in recent years around to the concept of, you know, that, like, the profile never lies. One of the key things on my profile is that, like, my favorite episode of a show, it's rarely most people's favorite episode, but just about everybody's like, oh, I really like that one, though. And I, yeah. that's the reaction I get to this one. The gang reignites the rivalry. And it's one of those ones where, again, it's one of the core things of the show is in terms of the sort of toxic amount of punishment that they sometimes absorb from other people and more often put onto other people. And this one is such a rich stew of both of them, whether it's Dennis and Frank getting tased in the frat house or, Mac and Charlie absorbing, getting blocked in the frat house later on or anything like that, compared to one of my all-time favorite scenes. I mean, if you put a gun to my head, what's my favorite scene in the show? It's probably Dennis and Frank breaking into that guy Art's house and doing the stuff to him as Dennis is ranting about the unfairness of the way the kids treated him. Oh no, they live in a fantasy world where there's no ramifications for what they do as he's flushing a rug down the toilet. I mean, that might be my favorite scene ever. It's my favorite episode ever. And yeah, so it's a thing where, like, are most people going to put it number one on their list? No, they're probably going to go more for The Nightman Cometh or some of these other ones here. Right. But I dare say that's one where just about every real fan of the show is going to be like, but I really like that episode.
And I think a lot of people, too, don't know them by the titles, although they do know a lot of them by titles.
Well, Flipadelphia. If you tell somebody Flipadelphia.
Yes, exactly. That's a great list. I can't argue with anything on that list.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that super fans will put together. And that is something that I was very happy to be able to do at the point in time. I got a lot of enjoyment out of creating that. I will say, not as much joy as subsequently, and as I was telling you off air. So I've had the book here for some period of time. It's almost always Sunny in Philadelphia, How Three Friends Spent $200 to Create the Longest Running Live Action Sitcom in History and Help Build a Network. So I've had this now for a little bit. So ever since right about when it came on the market, it's been a short few months now. And I'd gone through and I'd read it recreationally as I wanted to be able to do as a super fan here, just absorbing everything. But as I'm approaching it a little bit differently today from a research perspective and going through and in the acknowledgments here, as I said to you off air, what a joy. Shout out to my OU buddy Rick Morris for sharing his enthusiasm for and knowledge of Sunny. Thank you, Rick. So I can't express enough my gratitude for that, for being mentioned in there, and that I get to sort of represent all the super fans out there in that way. And believe me, that's going to get circulated among a lot of my friends. I took the snapshot of that there. Like, I'm in a Sunny book. My friend put me in her Sunny book.
So glad I did that now.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to tell you that because, as I said before, you know, at this ultimate sort of, crossroads here, the ultimate intersection of being a very, very talented person and a very nice person. And as I've sort of half joked about before, I never got, too upset editing some of my youthful drivel back at the Post back in the day, such as comparing players on the OU golf team to Jack Nicklaus's comeback at the 86 Masters. You took everything in stride with that. And
I don't remember drivel. I don't remember any drivel.
Well, I appreciate that.
But I will say also, I was telling my husband about this, my friend Rick, and he was like the nicest guy on the sports staff. And if there were, they were getting a little rowdy at our meetings or whatever, I knew Rick was not going to be one of them. He was not going to say anything offensive or sexist. That just was not who he is. And so right back at you as one of the nicest people I've ever known.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you. And it just it was just so nice to be, shouted out in this book here, because like I said, it stands as, I think, a very, very definitive project. And as we talked about before, if you are a super fan like me and you, if you are somebody that's a more casual fan or somebody that's just a little bit kind of Sunny curious, I think it's the excellent, it's an excellent book. Sunny. If you are, how about potentially Sunny coded? Is that,
I think so. And, I think too, whether you even care that much about the show or becoming an expert or reading a whole book about it, I think people should know, if you are someone who considers yourself a TV historian or, you know, someone who really cares about TV history and understanding it, understanding how it's evolved to where it is now, or devolved, if you, some people would say, but I will say evolved. You have to at least know about Sonny and it's the basic history of it and how it became a success in a way no other show has for as long as it has already. And they're not done. I mean, there definitely will be a season 18 next year. But they have not, you know, announced any series finale yet. So it could go on. I mean, everybody jokes about that. They joke about that, that there'll be, you know, old men and old women with canes walking around, you know, doing the show in season like 40 or something. But I guess I don't really think that will happen. But I could see it going on past season 18. Who knows? They all have other things going. But I think that's another reason the show, I think especially for season 17, like we were talking about, I think that's another reason that it does continue to be good, is that they all go out and do these other things and fulfill those creative needs. And then they come back and they play together for 8 episodes and we get to see that.
Yeah. And again, maybe these other experiences that they're doing, I mean, it makes you more well-rounded to take on all these different types of projects here. So yes, definitely. I mean, maybe it's, I never thought of that before. That's an excellent point on your part. Maybe it's helping to make them better. Maybe the fact that season 17 was one of their best is no mystery, because the more life experiences, professional experiences that they're getting, they're able to infuse that back into the show. And, you know, a perfect example of that is, I was telling you before that I think Sonny, when I go to do the list for the show of the top 5 TV seasons of this year, it's probably going to make the list. The irony is, as I'm thinking about this, what is it likely to hip check off of the list? Something that I was likely to put on the list, but probably now goes to my honorable mention, is Mythic Quest. I mean, that was a really good season. It was like, and I felt like seeing Ian and Poppy back in the mainstream with everything else. I didn't like seasons 2 and 3 as much, where they were kind of on an island.
I didn't either. It was kind of hard to watch them, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Great minds think alike. Yeah. Like you want to, it was originally a workplace comedy. That's what I want to see. And that's what season 4 gave us. And it was funny watching Reddit, the way that everybody was just, I mean, I thought I was on the Cleveland Cavaliers Reddit forum for all the negativity I was seeing about season 4. Like, what are you talking about, people? You know, like it was an excellent season. It went out with a bang. But ironically, that's one thing that frees up Rob McElhaney to keep going with this. Of course, the soccer projects sort of mitigate against that a bit. These other guys have some projects as well. Caitlin Olsen, she's not slowing down at all as far as high potential and doing that. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to see him keep going. It is funny to see, as you said in the book, there a little bit of, and this is from the whole thing of like, do as I say, not as I do. But as Larry David, who's another big favorite of mine, said to Rob McElhaney, keep doing this thing forever. Larry David, who famously just ended Curb, which
surprisingly,
I mean, so don't know if he was already having some regrets as he said that or not. One of the funny things, you know, what do you think of that? Do you think there was any regrets?
I think he probably is now having regrets for sure. Okay. He may have already been then. You know what? The most surprising thing about that, other than the fact that he had told Rob McElhaney, or Rob Mack, as he is now legally known.
Yes, that's true.
Surprising, other than the fact that he had told that to McElhaney, is I think the reason he told Rob that is that he himself already realized that it's a pretty easy gig, especially for him. He didn't even have to let HBO know for sure when he wanted to do one. If he just called them up and said, I'm ready to do another season, they'd be like, okay. And they'd make room for it in the schedule and everything. So he had really the most ideal situation anyone has ever had in television. And he still decided to end it. And I just don't see, he does not seem like, he loves his golf. We know that from Curb and just his life. But you can't, I just don't see Larry David as being someone who can do nothing but play golf and have, you know, golf club lunches for the rest of his life. I feel like there's going to come a point, and not too far down the road, where he's going to have so much that he wants to say about a lot of things, that he's going to come back and he's going to want to do either a movie or, you know, just a one-off season. Yeah. I just can't see him going the rest of his life not letting us know what he thinks about certain things.
Yeah. I would hope that that would be the case. And what's funny is, and this is one of these relatively obscure pieces of trivia here, but the commonality between the two shows here, and actually the only core member of Sonny that was really out there to a decent degree before mm-hmm. Sonny, that of course mm-hmm. being Caitlin Olson in her role as Larry's sister-in-law turned lover subsequently on the show, which is a developed, only Curb could deliver that, right, Kimberly? I mean, that's, right. You know, only Curb. But it's one of those things where, and what's funny is that there's other members of the creative team, and their names are escaping me at the moment, but they subsequently went on to do another one of my favorite sitcoms of all time, another show that helped anchor FX for a number of years, The League. Love that show. What a talented group of characters there. But the husband and wife team from that, I believe, yes. emerging from Curb, but I think also Seinfeld. I think they'd also yes. worked with Larry David on Seinfeld. And yes. that was a thing where I've tried to pitch Sonny to a few friends of mine over a period of time who love Seinfeld. I like, yes. you know, it's, hey, watch it. It's like Seinfeld on crack. And
that
like,
is the best quote anybody ever came up with.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And like, I got to tell you, though, my pitch isn't working. Like my friends that have enjoyed Seinfeld, they come back and like they find Sonny to be sort of too foreign to their experience from watching and enjoying Seinfeld. And as somebody who sits at, and I think it's a large crossover on the Venn diagram of folks like me and you that love both of those. So
totally.
I don't get it. Like, I kind of think if you really love one, you might be open to loving the other one. But in my personal experience, that hasn't been the case. And I find that to be very, very curious.
I guess if I think about that, yeah, that's true for me too. I think it may be an age thing mm-hmm. A little bit.
Yeah.
But I also think it depends on, like, I feel like if you're trying to convert someone or introduce someone to Sonny, you should your top 10 list or your top 13 may be the best, like give them a list and say, watch these episodes because this will help you understand whether you're really getting a clear picture of who the characters are and what it's about. And that it's all very, very tongue in cheek. And, you know, cause I think that's another thing. If people aren't used to watching this kind of show because this kind of show hasn't existed very often. And they just ran with it. Like the more the seasons went on, they felt freer to go crazier. And, you know, they've always said that the thing that they hate most is the idea of repeating themselves. So, mm-hmm. you know, they've tried some wacky things, some episodes, I'm sure, you and I wouldn't like, or I wouldn't like, you wouldn't like, and it's somebody else's favorite, you know, because they have done some out there things. But that's great. That's why it's a great show overall, and why it's so hard for you, a super fan, to rank shows at the bottom tier, because there's been even the worst episode, and off the top of my head, I can't think of which one I would rate as the worst episode of all time. But I'm certain that there's something in even what I would consider to be the worst episode that made me laugh, or that I still think about as a great scene or something sometime.
I completely agree with that. And by the way, so looking at my list, what was my bottom
yes,
five?
I wanted to know what your bottom
okay. five. Okay. And this pains me because I really, all right, well, I'll give you a bottom 10 here, in this order. The bottom is Psycho Pete Returns. The gang gets a new member. Mac and Charlie write a movie. Mac fights gay marriage. Dennis gets divorced. Charlie catches a leprechaun. That one really didn't do it for me. Mac kills his dad, Frank's brother. Mac and Dennis Buy a Timeshare, and Gun Fever 2 Still Hot. So it's like any one of those would still entertain me, but like I'm spoiled. Like super fans are spoiled. And like I want the purest essence of the show as opposed to, hey, this one made me laugh a couple times during it. Like you said, every episode, you're going to find stuff that makes you laugh. We're just used to laughing continuously as we watch a show. And it's like, and what's funny is for all the times that I've rewatched different shows here, I have to kind of be in the mode of like, I don't want to watch this one because like it seems like it wasn't too long ago I watched it, and like it may not make me laugh quite the same way. Right. I need to not be anticipating the lines quite as much, you know. So it's like that's how super fans roll, you know, with this thing here. But you know,
and you're right, we are spoiled with that. Yeah. I kind of always, especially as I was writing the book, and I would rewatch bits and pieces and whole episodes sometimes. But I always go through kind of a Taylor Swift's eras. I have Sunny eras where I will have one episode that, you know, you have like 10 or 15 minutes or you're that you want to kill. And or maybe you're procrastinating something you were supposed to be doing. And you just want that one TV episode that's going to be so satisfying. It's the comfort food of Sunny. Yeah. So, but mine changes. So I've had one of my go-tos for a long time was Mac and Dennis Move to the Suburbs.
That's fun. That's a fun one.
It cracks me up. Just the mac and cheese and the dog and Dennis going psycho, which we love when he does that, but it's still funny to watch, and no one can do psycho over rage machine action like Glenn Howerton. But you know, so we all have those ones. I think the super fans all have, you kind of get in a little mood for a certain episode.
Yeah, you do. And there was a thing earlier this year, my first time ever of being on a cruise. I ended up with some extended family being on an Alaskan cruise. And in the cabin, firing up the stuff on the TV. Now, I thought it was a full thing here. Turns out it was just a playlist. But they had a Sunny playlist. There was probably 10 or 12 episodes, and probably watched them all when I was there. Yeah. I mean, which is what's funny is I had my iPad with me. I was connected to the internet. I could have pulled up anything and watched it on Hulu, but I'm like, let me lie back on the bed, watch this for a half hour. Let me watch another one before dinner. Yeah.
It's not the same. I know I do that with several TV shows where I've seen them 20 times, but if it's on live TV, there's just something about, you've got to stop and watch it.
Yes. So I did that. I watched, I don't remember if it was all the ones on the playlist, but it was a good chunk of them that were on there. And again, that's what super fans will do. And, you know, and this is a thing where, again, of course, this is not the first time that you have served the super fans of a fan base with your fine writing. We like to plug anything that we can for anybody that's on the show. Another book that I had gotten previously that, you know, I'm not a fan of to the same degree. I enjoyed watching it when I was a kid, but I really enjoyed learning about it from your book. The Way We All Became the Brady Bunch, How the Canceled Sitcom Became the Beloved Pop Culture Icon We Are Still Talking About Today. That was released, if Amazon is to be believed, in 2019. And I greatly enjoyed reading that one as well. And so, again, like I said, we always like to give a chance to plug, you know, anything and everything here. So what else should folks be aware of that you have in the pipeline or are planning on working on, et cetera?
I write a lot for a site called Gold Derby. That's like, you know, current stuff. And I don't have the next book for certain, but I'm thinking that I want to write a book about the movie Bridesmaids, one of my favorite comedies. But you know what? I have to say something about the, I love that you mentioned the Brady Bunch book. Thank you so much.
Sure.
I had a doctor that I was seeing earlier this year, and he was asked, it was the first time I had seen him, and he was asking me what I do. And I said, I'm a writer, I write books. in shame at journalism. And he said, what books have you written? So I told him about the Brady Bunch. And I told him this was before Sunny came out this year. He said, wow, the Brady Bunch and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, those are pretty different shows. And I was like, well, actually, that's an interesting thing that I hope people would, who read both of them, would make the connection that they both are actually, and I think it's part of what attracts me to the story of behind the scenes of both shows, is that they both were huge, huge underdogs. The Brady Bunch never was a top 20 hit, even though it's now one of, it's just a cultural phenomenon. It's not even a TV show that's a cultural phenomenon. It's just part of our American culture. But it was never a hit show. And mm-hmm. then there's Sunny, this little show that, you know, started with $200 and a mic on a broomstick. And, they just did a bunch of creative things. They took a bunch of risks. They worked so hard for many seasons to get more and more attention, to build a fan base, to build, you know, college students who then championed them and have become lifelong fans of the show, no matter how long it goes on. And you know, those two shows really have a lot in common in terms of where they started and where they ended up, even though Sunny hasn't ended yet. And, you know, we'll see how long it ends up going, but it certainly is. It has such a strong place in TV history now. And I would argue general pop culture history. I think they've gone beyond just being a popular TV show.
I think so as well. And looking at it here, hopefully, although again, I've learned in recent years with some of the folks around me not to take anything for granted in this regard, but I would like to think, you and I being contemporaries here, hopefully we still have a good amount of runway left in front of us here. If I could lobby for something here that I think you'd be very, very good at at documenting, if I was to say something else from FX, this is something that we actually chronicled. We actually did some live or quasi-live post shows for the last two seasons of it in 2014 and 2015, one of my all-time favorites. I'd love to see you take on Justified. I'd love to see that. I truly, it's one of my all-time favorites. And that is something too. I really feel like you could do justice to that here. So I'm just going to lobby for that to be on your ideal list for some
That's
time
gonna
later
be,
on.
I'm going to be obsessed with that now. That is a great idea. And agreed. If there's a second favorite of the dramas, it's absolutely my favorite. And there are, you know, you could make a great list of just FX dramas. I don't know. Did you watch Sons of Anarchy as well?
I saw parts of it. I'm not a completist on that. I am a completist subsequently on The Shield. I actually binge watched all of The Shield in 24 days at one point. And I will tell you, and it was like, and this is, so my co-host and I, FDH senior editor, Jason Jones, we were really kind of getting in the weeds with some of the Justified stuff here when we were doing the post shows. And that coincided with when I was watching The Shield. And I was watching some of these behind the scenes things. So sometimes I would bring that up during the Justified post shows, just if there was anything that made me think of The Shield. And what happened was I happened to see a video on there about one of this very, very great producer. I forget the gentleman's name, but he was somebody that was very close to Walter Goggins and passed away during the course of The Shield. And it was talking about their working relationship and everything. And I brought that up during the Justified thing, like, oh my God, in an alternate universe. I mean, first of all, you know, you'd rather imagine an alternate universe where this poor gentleman didn't pass away. But it's like, man, all the great work they did together on that show, like, it's hard to imagine Justified being any better, but it's like, holy crap, if you brought that dynamic to this show, you know? So it was like, it was really interesting because there were a couple different things beyond Walton Goggins being, you know, and he's one of my all-time favorite actors. I mean, I think he's the greatest actor of our generation. I really, really do. I
think he's great. And Fallout, new Fallout coming. That's that's something to look forward to.
I haven't seen any of that, but I keep getting told I need to watch that. So you're adding your voice to that list. I should watch that. Yep. Okay. All right.
You have to.
Okay.
Just for Walton Goggins, if nothing else, but it's legitimately very good. Very entertaining. Okay. But he's of course amazing.
Well, that you could become in the course of this year, Justified, the quasi official chronicler of the history of the FX network. If you had that one to say,
for me, FX is number one. It's better than HBO overall. I think.
Yeah.
They have just brought so much good stuff.
And I love HBO also, but yeah, no, I'd be hard pressed to disagree with you, because there's so much great stuff that's come out of FX. And again, one of the things that helped make it that was this show here, and of course this book.
Yes.
It's Almost Always Sunny in Philadelphia, How Three Friends Spent $200 to Create the Longest Running Live Action Sitcom in History and Help Build a Network, by Kimberly Potts. My great friend Kimberly Potts, as I hold this up to the camera here, go check out this book. Go get this book. Perfect for a stocking stuffer this time of year. And again, Kimberly, thank you so much for being here. So great to have this conversation. And I hope that this conversation ends up being useful in terms of spreading the word about the book and goosing some book sales. I certainly hope so.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you so much.
I really, really appreciate getting to talk to you, Kimberly, and I look forward to doing that again here subsequently on the show as you and I continue with our fascination of modern TV and all the great shows that proliferate with it. So I look forward to the next occasion that we'll be able to do this. Thank you so much, Kimberly, and thank you, everybody, for checking out. Thanks, and thanks, Kimberly. It's always a pleasure. You're such a dear. I really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1885.